Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's Adam's Family Retrospective Series.
It's time for some family bonding, whether you like it or not.
Hosted by Stuart.
Some called him inhuman leave.
Arnie.
You strike me as a very weird young man.
And Brock.
Damn, it's good to have you back.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
Don't let you frighten me.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Showtime!
Today we're talking about Halloween with the new Addams Family, starring John Astin, Ted Cassidy, Jackie Coogan, Henry Darrow, Jane Rose, Elva Ullman, with special guest appearance by Carolyn Jones, directed by Dennis Steinmetz. This is Brock, co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
And this is your altogether ooky host of Now Playing, Arnie.
We're finally getting our things in order. We're covering the Addams Family, and what a strange, ooky, kooky, weird kind of thing to actually be able to review. You would think the Addams Family wouldn't be a juggernaut of a franchise, but this is a franchise that has been going on for almost 100 years. That's remarkable.
I mean, I agree. When Stuart suggested doing the Addams Family just because Rob Zombie has a Munsters film out, I was like, who cares about the Addams Family? I mean, I know it keeps going, but then Stuart showed me the box office numbers, and I was like, damn, I guess people do care about the Addams Family.
Yeah, it's bigger than you think, and it's been around longer than you think, and it touches entire generations from young to old in ways that few franchises do. So I agree. It wasn't my first thought about what we should cover next. But yeah, given the fact that, yes, Rob Zombie has a new Munsters movie, Wednesday Addams has a new Tim Burton TV show starting in a few weeks on Netflix, and this has been a franchise that has earned $500 million, I guess we should dive in.
It's one of those things that the Addams Family just never dies, and it has been one of those franchises that has surprisingly transferred to many different aspects successfully. Not just movies, not just TV, it's a cartoon, it was a Broadway show, and of course this all started with Far Side-like cartoons. I guess I'm dating myself with Far Side references at this point in 2022, but as New Yorker cartoons back in the 1930s and 40s, and it ran all the way until the TV show. It was that popular that they decided to make a TV show out of comic strips, one-panel comic strips. That is an absolutely remarkable thing that I don't know if that could happen today. And the fact that it keeps getting rebooted for generation after generation at this point is mind-boggling.
Well, a few things. One, Addams Family lands on TV at a time when comic strips were coming to television. There had been Dennis the Menace. There would be Batman. There had been Dick Tracy.
Don't forget Blondie.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of shows were dabbling into those waters. What makes Addams Family difficult is it's a little more subversive than what was permitted on television. And that's because, yes, Charles Addams' cartoons were pretty morbid. You mentioned The Far Side. I'd also throw in Edward Gorey in there. They, like...
For sure.
More than the TV show. In fact, the TV show, the executives made a demand. We cannot have it be too much like the humor because the Addams Family characters like to dump boiling oil on Christmas carolers or, like, kill. You know what I mean? They literally kill people. And we can't have that on television.
It's all black comedy, black humor, and it's really fun. My kids love Edward Gorey. We love those here because we have that dark sense of humor. They get the joke there. But if I show them the original Addams Family cartoons, I'm not sure they would enjoy it as much as watching the new animated cartoons that they have enjoyed watching. And it's kind of interesting that each new generation does find this kind of humor and they keep adapting it to the modern age, and it still seems to work. The 60s TV show is much more watered down than the cartoons and what it would become later on in the movie. Also at that time, the Munsters was also on TV, which is also, we talked about the tie-in with Rob Zombie. The Addams Family and the Munsters are always seen to be paired together because they are in the same general milieu.
And I was a Munsters person. I want to put it out there. I was not familiar with the Addams Family until I got a Nintendo system and played Fester's Quest. I never watched this show. I probably knew the song, because how could you miss that? But I never watched this growing up. And I always liked the Munsters, mostly for Fred Gwynn and his performance as Frankenstein. You know, like, that was the draw to me. Why would I watch this? They looked more normal when you looked at the Addams Family. So I missed all of this. I didn't obviously read The New Yorker growing up, missed all those cartoons, didn't see this show even in syndication. It was the 1991 movie that introduced me to the Addams Family. So I came in late, I guess is what I would say. And what we're here to talk about today is something that I learned about this week, because I don't have a lifelong love for this TV show.
Growing up, when we did in the 70s and the 80s, old sitcoms from the 60s were in endless rotation. Green Acres, a lot of Brady Bunch, a lot of
Nick at Night, all of that stuff. Honeymooners.
Well, even before there was Nick at Night, I would never watch this stuff on Nick at Night because there was other stuff I could watch and I was too old of it. And I never liked this old stuff either. But sometimes the Addams Family would be on, or the Munsters. What's interesting is neither show made it to 100 episodes, which is like the magic number to be in syndication. So I think that they would bundle these and they'd run the Addams Family and then they'd run the Munsters. I, like you, Stuart, preferred the Munsters because as a child of six, I got it. There's a Frankenstein. There's a Dracula. I got what those archetypes were. Addams Family, instead they were spooky. They're basically what I'd consider now goth, but I didn't even know what that was as a kid, so I never found anything except Thing or when the episodes would have Cousin It. Those were the episodes I liked, but I watched this quite a bit as a kid. I did rewatch some of the episodes for this recording and found it as not funny now as I did back then. I think I'm still a Munsters guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I, too, watched plenty of this as a kid, but I remember none of it. I also kind of gravitated toward the Munsters for everything you just said. I found it more enjoyable, more fun, and Fred Gwynn had that amazing persona as Frankenstein, and he had a catchphrase you can even call him, and he was like, "Ah!" It was much more memorable than the Addams Family. But of course, what made the Addams Family stay in my mind more than anything else, even more than watching the show, was they were in the beginning of the Scooby-Doo mysteries. So they were a guest star. Scooby-Doo had this big series of cartoons, and it might have only been like 12 episodes, but in my mind it was run all the time, and they had the opening credits had the Addams Family in there as some of the guest stars you will see, and then of course the Harlem Globetrotters and Don Knotts, whatever.
I remember all those celebrities. Phyllis Diller, even. I thought that was right. The weirdest guest star they ever had.
And they were big when they did it. And so the Addams Family was relaunched as a cartoon at that time.
Jodie Foster voicing Wednesday.
Really?
Yeah, really. And you can call it like synergy of the earliest kind, like because they were the same company and they plugged their own cartoon by putting them on with Scooby-Doo. But that's how they stayed in my mind and forefront in my mind more than the Munsters for years later, because I was still watching Scooby-Doo into the 80s when I stopped watching. And I would watch these when I was sick at home. The Addams Family and the Munsters were on TV after the game shows, if you were sick at home, right? That's how you watch these shows. So yeah, I think we're on the same place.
Let's walk through the history really fast. 1930. Charles Addams is a cartoonist who just has a morbid sense of humor. He has had failed marriages. He has had a rather normal upbringing, nothing that would indicate. I don't know if there was mental illness in the family, but he had a sick sense of humor that played well with the New Yorker at that time, which really took the format that he really invented for them. And to this day, I read the New Yorker now. They like to have those one panel, funny, twisted little comic strips. He drew all of these characters for decades. None of them had names. They were not a family. There was no Addams Family. There was no Gomez or Morticia or whatever. Those quote-unquote characters appeared in only 62 of his hundreds of strips. And so it really was the fact, I think, that the Munsters was coming to television and an ABC executive says, how are we going to top CBS? They see a book display with those cartoons and say, we're doing this. And they call up Charles Addams and say, make them a family. And he's the one, I guess Gomez originally was going to be called Rapelli. Pugsley was originally going to be called Pubert, but I guess that was considered too vulgar for TV. He had different ideas about how this will go. And the whole thing was going to be called the Charles Addams Family of Characters. Wisely got shortened down. But he gave approval. They shot like a 15-minute tease. John Austin was the first one they brought in to play the butler. They didn't have him pegged for Gomez at all. And they had somebody else for Morticia, but they ended up getting a movie star. Carolyn Jones had worked with Elvis, had worked with Hitchcock, and she was married to TV producer Aaron Spelling. They could get her. And so it was launched in the fall at the same time as the Munsters. If you want to know who came first, I suppose the Addams Family did because of the comic strips. But I feel like as a TV concept, it was in competition to the Munsters.
How did that happen, that the same type of sitcom comes out at the same time? I would have thought one came first and the other came out to rip it off.
I always thought the Munsters was the ripoff because the cartoon came first. But it seems like two studios, two TV networks had the same idea for fall 1964. And that was to make Father's Knows Best a little bit more weird. What they would also argue at the Addams Family is that they're more witty. I was reading fan books and stuff like that. And what they claim is while the Munsters is essentially about a stupid dad that's always getting them into problems, the Addams Family is more subversive because really they're normal. They actually have all the qualities we'd want in a family. It's just that their tastes are, as Arnie said, goth. And that you have children that respect their elders and they play well together. You'll never see a fight between any of them. That's what they would claim makes this show special.
Yeah, rewatching the episodes, I realized all the jokes rely heavily on irony. They're a happy family, but instead of pruning roses from the bush, they cut off the tips. It's the opposite of what you'd expect. The first episode had a truant officer coming because the kids weren't in school. And when the kids come home, they're all upset because they read this horrible story in which a dragon was killed. You know, instead of the knight vanquishing the dragon, they're like, it's a mean knight who's hurting a dragon. And Hansel and Gretel are about terrible children who burn a witch, you know? So it's just this opposite of what you expect answer. I don't know how long that would last in humor. And B, I'm sorry to say, as we're starting a retrospective series, but I didn't laugh once. It was like, I found the episodes, much like when I was a kid, they could be on, but I wasn't really enjoying them or able to pay full attention.
I watched a couple episodes as well. I wanted to get a flavor again for the first time. And then I dug a little bit deeper into who made it. And what's interesting to me about it is all the writers, all the people behind the scenes have been involved with the Marx Brothers. I think their concept was, how do we take Vincent Price or Edgar Allan Poe and turn them into Groucho Marx, like right down to the cigar. And so you have very vaudevillian gags. It really does feel like something, even old for 1964, the humor feels like something from decades prior, because all of these writers were 50, 60 years old and had written for, again, Groucho Marx was on TV. You know, he was doing game shows. So that kind of humor was the standard of that time. But I don't necessarily respond to it now. We'll get into it. We'll get into this very sad reunion movie in just a minute. But just to cover what happened, the show was canceled after 2 years, 64 episodes, and then syndication happens and they need content. So this thing is played all the time. And suddenly they realize we canceled it too early. It's Star Trek all over, right? There was more money to be made here, and we pulled the plug before we got every last dime. So we make lunchboxes and toys and cartoons. They did try a variety show. Believe it or not, they did want to do a Donnie and Marie. Like, they test piloted that. They tried in lots of ways in the 70s to think about how to bring this thing back. And then finally, on a rival network, NBC, they get most of the old cast back and call it the New Addams Family.
Now, why is it the New Addams Family? Is that because of the kids or because they just wanted to show people it's a brand new concept here? Is it new being used loosely, not as the family is new, but more like new content for you to watch from your favorite characters?
I assume because it's on a different network and in color, and the house is different, and Grandmama's played by a different actress. There's little tweaks, but I think that the word new is Yes, just to plug the idea that you're going to get a new episode after so many years of watching the same episodes in syndication.
Right, okay. I think it's a good idea to tie it into Halloween. That made a lot of sense to me. This theme song has now become a Halloween song staple. My kids knew the theme song from the TV show years before we watched any Addams Family content here at the house. That makes a lot of sense. I noticed that the grandmother was different. Am I wrong in thinking that the woman who played the Wicked Witch of the West was on this show as the grandmother?
You're talking about Margaret Hamilton from the original 1939 Wizard of Oz. They were proud to have gotten her for the 60s TV show, and they brought this character back thinking she would also come back. She took a hard pass. Maybe she read the script. Maybe she just wasn't feeling it. Grandmama is not here. The original one is not here because she was actually terminally ill and died a few months after this aired. So some people didn't come back because they didn't feel good, and some people probably didn't have a good feeling about it. So, but most of them are here, including the all-grown-up child actors and new child actors to play them as young people at the same time.
I don't get it.
No. No, I don't get that either.
Where they came from, I don't know, but we can discuss it all. Arnie, how about a plot? We can dive into this Halloween special.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Yep. I know, I can't believe they dropped that. I mean, it came out the same year as Star Wars did, right? And they must have put that in there quickly in September when they filmed this thing.
Halloween is coming, and the Addams Family are looking forward to the annual celebratory party. Visiting the family is Gomez's brother, Pancho, who openly lusts for Morticia despite her being his sister-in-law. Gomez, played by John Astin, is very jealous, afraid Pancho could replace him in the family as the children's father and Morticia's husband. Worse, Gomez is leaving, traveling to Tombstone, Arizona for what he believes to be a lodge convention. In actuality, Gomez was tricked by a group of men who want to rob the Addams house. Bones Lafferty, Louis the Lard, and Mikey are a trio of thieves convinced that the Addams are rich and keep their fortune in a safe inside their house. They plan to pose as extended relatives of the family to be invited inside for the Halloween party, then steal the safe. The night of the party, they do infiltrate the family, but are stymied when Gomez returns home. The Addams' strange house, with a lion and a bevy of spooky, ooky things, bests the thieves. When the police come to break up the party due to a noise complaint, the thieves confess and turn themselves in as a way to escape the Addams family home. And Gomez has become more confident with his role in the family, gets over his jealousy, as credits roll, and they live happily ever after.
Gotta make sure to say that, because it's so important when telling a story, as they tell us in this show. It opens up in color. Addams Family is always in black and white. I would have caught a production value would have been really cool as they start off in the first 30 seconds in black and white, and then whitewashes over to like a wipe over to color would have been a really clever way of presenting this as brand new, interesting. And then they open right into a theme song. Question, do they not have the rights to the original Addams Family theme song? It's in a different key. It's not the exact same song. They're just snapping.
It's close enough that they'd have to have rights to the original one. They have snapping, and later on they do doot. But it is so different from the beginning. I think this is trying to appeal to an audience that maybe got sick of the Addams Family or feels they can watch the Addams Family at any time in syndication. Why would they tune in for this? I think that if you're playing to that audience, it's smart not to try to play on nostalgia by starting in black and white and to just show them this is new but familiar.
Yeah, Vic Mizzi, who wrote the theme, is back doing this music. He writes the awful, awful Halloween song that comes at the end as well. So musically, he's just one of the many people returning. This is, and lots of TV shows do this, one of those returns where it's just about trotting everyone out for a curtain call. This feels like it exists largely just to see the people back in the costume, take a bow, tell a few of the old jokes, not new ones, and then we're done. We're good. This is just sentimentalism. And yeah, the color thing is new, but I want to point out the Munsters had already done a couple TV movies in color, so they really probably felt pressure to keep up. And I also want to point out the person writing this wrote Munsters Go Home. The person directing this had worked on the Munsters, and the DP had worked on the Munsters. This is, yes, almost subversively a Munsters movie in Addams Family drag.
I just want to say that I don't think this is new content at all. What I think they're doing here is the greatest hits of the Addams Family. Everything that you remember from the Addams Family is in this movie. In fact, a lot of these same gags are in the 1991 movie. I haven't seen that movie in years, and we'll watch it for our next episode in this retrospective, but I remember some of these gags from that same movie.
You just reminded me of something, Brock. There was an episode called Halloween with the Addams Family back during the original series run. So maybe this is called Halloween with the new Addams Family. It should probably be New Halloween with the Addams Family. But nevertheless, yes, they have this plot before. In that original one, Don Rickles and another guy are thieves that hide out in the Addams Mansion from the cops and then get spooked by everything. So this is essentially doing that episode on a grand scale for 72 minutes.
Grand scale. I love those words, grand scale, because we talked about the color. Going back and watching the 60s Addams Family, black and white does it a lot of favors.
Yep, indeed.
You know, the sets probably were as cheap as the sets we're seeing here, but because they were in black and white, they just photographed better, and it gave it more of a spooky sense because everything was black, right? And I think maybe they reused the same sets because, you know, when filming black and white, you have to use different colors to evoke mood. Like, you may have your main character in a neon orange sweatshirt so that it looks like a good shade of gray when it's in black and white, even though it looks silly in person. And then here, the Addams Family house is all these shades of green and not black and not really spooky, but just tacky.
Yeah, in the 70s. I thought I got herpes from this, honestly. Just my eyeballs. Like, it was so 70s and sleazy.
Also, Arnie, not doing any favors, is the makeup. It's completely obvious with the Uncle Fester makeup, and especially with Lurch's wig. The color isn't doing any favors either. They didn't adjust the makeup for Uncle Fester, it seems, especially in the close-up shots, how obvious it is. So yes, I agree that maybe they should have changed it a little bit from what they used to do for the new format and color.
Maybe some of this is. I don't know how you guys watch this. There are bootlegs out on YouTube. I did find something called Tubi, which is a streaming service that is, it had the full movie and like NBC logo at the beginning. It feels like a legitimate source. This thing was put out on VHS back in the 80s. I think that's what I'm watching. I think I'm watching a VHS dub of something that probably looked a little bit better when it aired on TV.
Yeah, I mean, this was obviously shot very cheaply back in the day. It didn't look that great, but it was pretty crisp.
Yeah, there's some bad versions out there. If you do watch the YouTube, again, you'll just feel like you're watching a snuff film. It's just gross looking. But maybe even at its best, this thing, they didn't have a lot of money behind this. And you can feel that. They just went and shot in a real house as opposed to, like, I think some of it's a set. But, like, it just doesn't look like the old Addams Family place at all.
Do you think this would have played better if we watched a version with commercials and commercial breaks? Because at 77 minutes, it kind of felt like they were repeating a lot of the beats because there were definitely commercial breaks in between, right? And this would run 2 hours with commercials. Had they designed it as a 1 hour special instead of a 2 hour special, and we actually had a version we all watched together with breaks in between, maybe the plot would have been less repetitive and flowed better as a movie. Did you guys think about that when you were watching it, that the flow was a little off now and then because of the commercial issue?
I definitely noticed the flow being off. And you bring up an excellent point. I do think that attention spans being what they were back then, nobody had VCRs, so nobody is going to be able to see all of this. They're going to come in late or they're going to have to leave early. And so, yes, the idea of giving your full attention to this, I feel like it does work almost like a sketch show. It feels like a variety show much more than it is a plot.
Did you watch this on Tubi, you said, Stuart? Because they insert commercials, and I wonder if that would have helped. I inserted commercials by pausing this thing regularly, leaving the room, and then coming back.
I actually fell asleep about a half hour in, and I woke up 2 hours later, and I'm like, oh gosh, I fell asleep. I'll rewind to where I was. And I rewound, and I saw, wait, there's 45 minutes left of this? This kind of feels like it's almost over. And like, that was a real wake-up call for me about how this movie was repetitive, and it could have been condensed had it been in a 1 hour slot instead of a 2 hour slot.
Or a 30 minute episode, even.
Well, clearly they're stretching it out. Let's get into it. Right. So we open the movie, quote unquote, with an extra Gomez, whose brother is in town, who dresses just like him, who smokes a cigar, who lusts after his wife. It's like they have an extra character here for no real good reason.
I thought at first it was John Astin playing two roles. You know, you'd have that in the Brady Bunch with Alice playing her mean cousin, and it was both played by the same actress. But it turns out, Stuart, we saw this guy a couple of years ago. It's the sheriff from Losing It, the Mexican sheriff.
Henry Darrow is in everything. I mean, he was just an actor, a go-to sitcom particularly, but also one-hour dramas. He just popped up in things, and his resume is very long, and he's worked with everyone. And yes, the interesting choice they've made here, the dilemma for Gomez is he's finally stepping away from the house to go attend to a lodge meeting where he thinks he's going to be, you know, it's kind of like the Elk Club or something. He's going to be made head serpent or something like that. But he's leaving his wife in the hands of a lusty brother who thinks the way that he does and who used to date his wife and who every time she says French is kissing up her arm.
I always thought, because of the 1990s movie, that Gomez and Fester were brothers, and Uncle Fester is Uncle Fester because he's the brother. But this uncle is much younger than Uncle Fester, so is Uncle Fester, in this version of the Addams Family, not Gomez's brother also? Is he just Uncle Fester because he's old in the family? Is he great Uncle Fester? I'm kind of putting too much thought into it, but you get my point. Why have an extra uncle character here? Why not make him a completely different character? We already have an uncle character who's not a clone. My thought was they only had John Astin for a day, and they needed to fill in this time with somebody else, but that turned out to be false.
Yeah, no, I think, first of all, just to be clear, Uncle Fester, because none of these characters were related in the comic strip, again, it wasn't an Addams Family until it became a show. I think that it has evolved. Sometimes Uncle Fester is Gomez's brother. Sometimes he's been Morticia's brother. I always took that Grandmama, Morticia, and him were related, that was the tree.
I gave that question some thought, but not too much thought. I also wondered, you know, if you've got these two uncles, is Fester on Morticia's side of the family? Is Fester Morticia's uncle? But you know what? It is what it is. He's an uncle. I mean, if you recall, Samantha on Bewitched had a lot of aunts and uncles and a Dr. Bombay, and that was all very weird, too.
Yep, fair enough.
But yes, Gomez, it's Halloween, and his brother seems to be usurping his family, taking over the Halloween traditions, telling the story of, okay, yeah, why does it have to be Cousin Shy? I don't know.
He's shy. He doesn't show himself.
No. Why does he have to be related? I guess because it's the Addams Family. Everyone's a cousin, a nephew, a niece. But yes, the fact that the spirit of Halloween is some kind of, it's almost like a Christmas fable. Instead of Santa Claus, you're getting the spirit that will pop out of your jack-o'-lantern and leave presents under your scarecrow.
And the joke here, of course, is that we learn that he's going away. He's so scared his brother's going to take a spot, but he'll be back tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Ha ha. What a funny gag. Lurch here has some good comic business with the luggage and stuff, if you want to call that funny. The laugh track makes me think it's supposed to be hysterical. Ted Cassidy is back as Lurch. I, of course, know Ted Cassidy best from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He played the antagonist in that famous guns and a knife fight scene when he goes back at Butch Cassidy. Giant, towering, gigantic man who, of course, played Lurch and continued to play Lurch until Kingdom Come.
I know him best from the Star Trek episode.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, he's worked forever, too. Very big man, perfect for this role. And my favorite stuff in this movie, I'm going to say it here, are the silent bits with him. It just seems the character who comes across strongest here, believe it or not, is Lurch. I think they did a lot of fun stuff with him throughout the episode here. I say episode, the movie. I enjoyed him the most.
Yeah, I think Lurch is my favorite family member. I'll just go ahead and say that. It's the voice, the mannerisms, the way he plays the harpsichord. He does kind of feel the most like Fred Gwynn on the Munsters, like the Frankenstein quality about him. So yeah, I just really respond well to Lurch whenever he's on screen. He is definitely my favorite.
Not to just bash upon this movie, but the people who are going to have the best performances are the ones with the fewest lines, because the writers did not make funny jokes. And I think that this guy, he doesn't speak much. He does have that low voice, but a lot of what he's doing is silent humor and body language and facial expressions. And so I agree. When Lurch was on the screen, I was having a lot of fun, much more so than when people are mistaking Gomez Adams' grand serpent for being like a first-degree worm or something like that. That level of humor didn't really giggle for me, even though, yes, this laugh track, oh my God, wow. This laugh yeah. track.
Yeah, why hold on to that? Well, it's because you wouldn't know that this was supposed to be the jokes if you watched it without it. It is reminding you that you're supposed to be laughing, which is kind of shocking, right? Like, that is like a horrific moment when you realize that was a big laugh line and you're like, woof, this is really... Could the Marx Brothers have pulled this off? That's my question. If this was supposed to be a kooky, ooky Marx Brothers movie with Groucho Marx, now, you know, John Astin... I don't know. Like, I feel like that aspiration was never achieved in any of the episodes I saw. I've seen Marx Brothers movies that I enjoyed, so it's hard for me to reconcile. But it does feel like this humor is something that your grandparents would laugh at more than subversive hippie kids would be laughing about.
Well, Stuart, I think the Marx Brothers have a couple of things going for them that these guys don't have. They have the clever patter with Groucho, right? And they have Harpo's silent antics. But they also have energy. They have a lot more energy in the best Marx Brothers movies. There are some lull ones you can find out there. But the best Marx Brothers movies, the thing that they really bring to all of it is the energy. So it constantly keeps moving. And they throw so many jokes out there, they all can't hit, but they're all some smile lines, if not laugh lines. Here, there's no energy at all. There's presence. Besides Lurch, Morticia has a lot of presence, especially as she folds her arms with her hands up. Mm-hmm. She's all presence all the time, mm-hmm. and she's saddled with some pretty corny dialogue.
Yeah.
Do you think these actors wanted to be here is what I'm wondering. Obviously, none of them had to be there, but watching the series, I did feel an energy that I think is lacking from this. And maybe right. it's the writing, but I just feel like these people are going through the motions of characters for whom they've probably been mostly stereotyped now for nearly 20 years, and they're just confident they can slip back into it like an old shoe, especially Uncle Fester pulling that same performance. But I, you mentioned a lack of energy, and I'm feeling it too.
And Jackie Coogan's a weird one, because he has been a star all his life. They call him the first child star of Hollywood. He was the kid in Charlie Chaplin's The Kid movie. And from that time, he's always worked in comedies. He's worked with everyone, Bob Hope, Red Skelton. He comes from that. You feel like he should be Don Rickles or something. He has that energy here. But yes, is it that he's older? Is it that this material is no good? Is it because there's no one to play off of? There's no point for Uncle Fester to be here. And it doesn't matter how many light bulbs they shove into his mouth. It's not a bright spot.
But they didn't put a light bulb in his mouth this time. That's one gag they didn't do.
I know.
It's like his famous gag, and he didn't do it here.
Yeah. They bury him in the sandbox, and he likes to throw people on the torture rack. That is the bits he gets. Grandmama, like I said, the actress that originally invented her for TV, bowed out. So they got someone, to me, that looked a lot like Cloris Leachman from Young Frankenstein. And her whole bit is, I'm in the kitchen making gross-looking food with a female thing called Ladyfingers.
Well, so that's Thing's girlfriend, Thing's relative?
I thought I heard it was Mother Frump's thing. Like, she had brought it there.
Oh.
And now Mother Frump is trying to get home and invent a spell that will allow her to fly away on her broom. Everyone has business. None of it feels funny. And I'm wondering, is that the fault of the performers, the writers, the producers, or everything?
Or us. I'm going to put it out there. Humor ages poorly. You know what I tried to watch just last night and couldn't make it through? Gallagher. I had never seen a Gallagher stand-up routine in my life. I decided, let's see what this Gallagher is about. I went back and I'd seen some George Carlin, and he was funny. So I tried Gallagher, and wow, was it not funny. I watched a half an hour of a special on Amazon, turned it off. Humor does not age well. Sitcoms, I feel, do not age well at all. Sitcoms I loved in the 80s and 90s, I watch these days, and they have nothing for me. Like, Family Ties was my favorite show, and now, other than the Tom Hanks episode, it's just not funny. So maybe this hit hard in 1977, but it is not doing it now.
I think Stewart's hit the nail on the head, though, with this nostalgia thing. I think it's more about seeing these guys back. I read somewhere that Carolyn Jones was dying at this time as well, or she was going to die soon after this.
Yeah, she, about 3 years from now, she dies very early. I think at 50, she dies of stomach cancer. So around 1980.
And that was, you know, the death sentence, but you would never know it here. She's, I think, of all the characters, she and Lurch come across the best because of the presence, and they're very there. They're very present.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me that Carolyn came to play, but she was saddled with just standing around commenting on other people or some lame plot lines. But I think it's more about when Stewart said the nostalgia show, didn't they have the, you guys reviewed this, the League of the Super Friends, like, almost like a game show, like, and all these guys dressed in costumes with Batman and Robin again and all the other thing.
Same concept. We've canceled Batman too early. Let's bring it back now that it's a syndicated hit and see it in this embarrassing way.
Exactly.
Now, I checked into this, Arnie, because you're right. Maybe we're just at the wrong age or in the wrong decade to appreciate this. I went and found a book written by a super fan that chronicled all of it, and he barely gave this special a mention. He called it cheesy and regrettable.
There you go.
Okay.
He loves every episode of the show, and he thinks this reunion is trash.
That answers a lot of questions.
Yeah, thank you for that illuminating answer. So Mikey doesn't like it is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
I saw that coming. That was the only time I kind of smiled. I mean, I saw it coming a mile away, but it was still fun they did it. And that was a very popular commercial at the time. So good for them.
To spell it out for the listener who hopefully avoided this plague is that you get introduced to these bad guys and they're surveilling the Adams house.
Post Watergate, this is very relevant. Suddenly the house is bugged and people are listening in an impersonal Watergate hotel looking place. And they think that if Gomez goes away to this lodge, they can rob it.
And so they want to send somebody in to do firsthand reconnaissance. And we get our two bad guys, the main guy, Bones Lafferty, and Lewis the Lord, don't want to go in. They're scared. But they have a third guy with them, Mikey. And they're going to replay that Life cereal commercial, which maybe the millennials and the Zoomers in our audience don't remember. But it was two kids who didn't want to taste the cereal and say, give it to Mikey. He'll try anything. And then Mikey tries the cereal and likes it. I don't know that a kid who will eat anything, which I assume to include glue and boogers, liking your cereal is a great endorsement for said cereal, but this is what they're going to replay beat for beat with Mikey agreeing to go into the Adams house.
Yeah, their big joke is parroting a cereal commercial from the 70s, which maybe I remembered in the 80s, there was a whole rumor that Mikey had tried to break dance and popped his neck during a headlock. Remember that? He was paralyzed.
No, he swallowed Pop Rocks and drank Coke and his stomach exploded.
Oh, that too.
Yeah.
That was after the paralyzed, I think.
I heard he did a wall walk move, you know, where you could jump on the wall and then he broke his neck. So we've all heard different urban legends about Mikey.
And they also brought him back in the 80s, too.
Yes. Mikey has a legacy to television, and here they parody it. He is being played by Vito Scotti, who I guess is the Addams Family TV series' favorite guest star. He had already appeared on the show 5 times, including the pilot as the truancy officer that tried to get Wednesday and Pugsley to come to school. They wanted to bring him back because he was such a part of the cast. He's another comeback. And his bit is Mikey. It's a lot. Yeah, it's basically watching a burglar come into the house under dubious means. I think he's saying he's assessing the property and being scared by all that he sees.
Did either of you guys rewatch the pilot episode of this series before this review? Because I didn't realize that was the same actor, but I did start with the first episode and watch a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing the same exact shtick because as the truancy officer, he's being led through the house and introduced to this weird Addams Family as we, the audience, are being introduced to the Addams Family for the first time. And he's jumping at the leg in the fish mouth and he's shocked that Morticia cutting the bulbs off the roses. So they're actually recreating the pilot with the same actor. I noticed that there was a lot of similar jokes with this pilot, but I had no idea that they got the same actor back and were basically like, let's make it again.
I didn't realize it was the same actor, but I did very much pick up on the humor here is, oh, a normal person's walking into this abnormal house, let the comedy ensue. The torture room is kind of funny because that's not really a room you see in a lot of people's houses. I'm not saying, I'm not going to say no one's house, but in most people's houses you don't see. And that bit was funny with the lion. I liked that. It was cute, even though it was an animatronic lion in the close-up shot or whatever, but it was...
You think that was animatronic? I thought that was a real lion because you never see it in frame with people. I thought it was stock footage.
No, the Filmway Entertainment always had animals. They also did Green Acres and they did Beverly Hillbillies. And so they just had animals on call. Even Arnold the Pig guest starred on Adam's Family. So real lion, but never in the same shot as the actors.
Oh, I stand corrected then.
But here's the thing. Here's what I would say in defense of what they're trying to do. If you threw away the production values...
They did.
But if you ignored how painful it is to watch this movie and think about the fact that you're walking through and seeing a clothesline where garter snakes are the clothespins or whatever. Like, there's a child inside of me that enjoys that kind of ghoulish, garbage pail kid kind of gag. You know what I mean? So I feel like if you think about them as just walking through a series of Charles Adams panels... Like the old comic strip, it's not laugh out loud funny, but there's something kind of amusing about a few of the macabre things we're seeing. But the problem is, it's just not ghoulish enough. By my standards, dark comedy needs about 100% more blackness in it than this has.
The weirdest thing, besides the house and the snakes and the clothespins, is coming up right now. We saw Pugsley and Wednesday in the backyard, in the cemetery behind the house. But then all of a sudden, Wednesday Sr. and Pugsley Sr. show up, the grown-up actors who played them as kids. This was very confusing to me.
Me too.
I don't understand why they are named the same, and Wednesday Jr. implies that she's Wednesday's daughter. So why they have two new kids, I don't get. Why don't you just have the kids be grown up?
Maybe they grow on trees. You know, I'm not sure.
I don't get it. It was really weird.
It doesn't seem like Morticia ever allows Gomez to have sex.
I agree.
She just wants the hand kissing.
Well, what I think is to take it out of logic, and is this Morticia's other children named the same because Gomez didn't like having the kids out of the house, or is it Pugsley's son and Wednesday's daughter? What they want is to give you the familiar, which is Wednesday and Pugsley as little kids and little kids running around with the pigtails and the outfits, but they also want to bring the actors back and honor them in that way. So you have this completely nonsensical turn that, much like whose brother is Fester, it's not rewarding for you to ask the questions.
Right. But you could have had them come back as different relatives and
yes,
do a bit like, oh, you look like Wednesday or whatever. Like, you could have done something that would have been somewhat clever. It's like the worst way to bring them in fact.
It's an Addams Family reunion. You very well could have had Uncle Pugsley and Aunt Wednesday for whom the children were named. I mean,
right.
It seems like it writes itself, but... No, they're going to do it this way and really just confuse me because I had the same thoughts of, wait, who are these people? I thought we saw the kids already as new kids. And Wednesday even comes in with her Marie Antoinette doll that she has from her first episode where she got beheaded.
Call a little girl Thursday even. Make it that joke. Something, you know, different.
Yeah, why not make new characters is a question that I guess gets answered when you realize this is a reunion and not a relaunch. These aren't the new family. Oddly enough, there is a TV series called The New Addams Family. It will come out in the late 90s. And it ain't these folks. This is the old Addams Family, whatever the title says. And so they don't want to innovate. And the new kids... Because we want children, because it was so important to have children in that TV show, we brought in lookalikes. I mean, this whole thing is about lookalikes. That's what we're going to find out here, is that Gomez blows back in on Halloween, and these thieves, Mikey, he runs back, and they're going to try and infiltrate with a fake Morticia and a fake Gomez.
And two bodybuilders. What's with the bodybuilders?
That feels like a way to make a party. I feel like I watched a lot of 60s and 70s happening kind of movies where it's always funnier if you have just zaniness. And bodybuilders, they were abnormal. You wouldn't see them every day. So to have that type of body here as well as everything else just adds to the... It's a cheap way of doing something over the top, is I guess the way I would look at it.
I would think also at this time the bodybuilding was more of a 70s thing. I know that Arnold Schwarzenegger was known at this time. Lou Ferrigno, the Incredible Hulk, bodybuilders who look like that were a thing. Like, you want to throw in bodybuilders because that's like a new modern thing to throw into this thing. That's how I took it to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think about Rocky Horror Picture Show doing the Charles Atlas bit, and that would have come out a few years before. So there's some precedent for putting a creepy, funny haunted house together with Beefcake. Call it what you will. It has the attitude of let's throw everything in the pot here, but it gets very confusing. It gets very confusing that we have two sets of Wednesdays and Pugsleys, three sets of Gomez, if you count Pancho, who
right.
looks like him, two different Morticias, plus Morticia's sister Ophelia, played by the same actress, but as a blonde. All I can tell you is the humor is supposed to become from mistaken identities. The rest of this show is about you think you're dancing with one of them, but it's really another one.
And one joke, maybe it worked in the swinging 70s. I don't know. But I don't think a joke that would have played on the Brady Bunch is Mike Brady's brother coming and just totally horny trying to jump Mrs. Brady's bones. I think that is really a strange, strange turn. And I don't know if it comes from the classic series. I didn't watch all the episodes. But man, I was left dumbfounded by that plot that was more creepy than funny.
It was uncomfortable for sure. And he's also bland. The actor is not giving anything to it. I'm not saying John Astin is the world's greatest actor in this role, but he has something in Gomez that the other guy clearly was missing playing Pancho.
Yeah, I want to be clear. I like John Astin, even though I might prefer Fred Gwynne as the head of a monster household. I do think there's something about his eyes that just naturally deranged. And
sure.
Again, if you're going for Groucho Marx and Edgar Allan Poe, he sort of nails that in between, but yes, this is not the vehicle for it. Even the fans of the TV show will tell you this is not the Addams Family at their best. And so, yeah, you get to see the old Pugsley. One thing I want to be clear, though, on the episodes I watched, I don't think the kids ever really were there that much. Like,
right.
They weren't a big part of it. So seeing grown-up Pugsley as a witch doctor or grown-up Wednesday playing the piccolo until the glass shatters, you can just leave that out. Just leave the little kids. We didn't need to see these actors. It's nothing to see them doing these bits.
Or leave out the little kids. They do nothing.
Right. Why have the kids there at all? Have the kids grown up already? And they talk a little bit about like Pugsley and Wednesday want a Kawasaki or something. Kind of like, was it Rumspringa from the Amish? Like they get out of their lifestyle into their other world and they discover and want other things.
They're both in college, I get the sense.
But they come back and they're completely back to being Addams. And they actually dress the way they used to dress, just in adult versions of a striped shirt in a little dress. And then when they get back, they're just playing music. So they're out of the way of this farcical mistaken identity thing that ends the show. They also have the mistaken identity of, what's always funny, a man dressed like a woman and someone falls in love with the woman, the old Bugs Bunny trick even, with Lurch.
I mean, again, Lurch is the best stuff here. So the fact that right. one of the thieves infiltrated the party as Little Bo Peep and Lurch is going to take him up to the tower. I actually think it's going to get dirtier than it is. And the whole point is Lurch is suffering from some delusion that there's a pterodactyl flying around and he's going to catch it. And the punchline is that he just catches the mother character once her broom finally puts her in the sky.
So what I liked about the ending here, this end stuff, is that I couldn't believe it. There were payoffs to what they set up what felt like 3 hours earlier with the pterodactyl net and grandma trying to fly. If they cut this down to 45 minutes for an hour long thing, some of these things they laid out in the first part for these quote unquote payoffs here would probably play a little bit better. But I was enjoying that he caught the grandmother in the net. I thought that was a clever way of tying things a little bit together. I also thought it was very funny how it looked like the grandmother, when she flew up the stairs, she was on one of those stair elevator things that old people have in their homes that go up the stairs, and they sped up the movie. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Like when, yeah, an electric seat.
Yeah, it was felt like it was a special effect using an electric chair, and I thought that was really funny.
Like in Gremlins, yes.
Like in Gremlins, exactly, with Polly Holiday, exactly right. And so I will give a compliment of sorts to how they tied this seemingly strange thing of Lurch with a giant net early in the movie to it paying off here with the grandma story too.
Yeah, you want that kind of zaniness. You want to feel like everyone has something to do. What's, I think, remarkable is we're paying more attention to these back characters than we are Gomez and Morticia, who are just repeatedly being tied up and making vague S&M kind of jokes.
And using a flute to send Morse code messages to Wednesday. Hey, come untie me repeatedly. But, you know, Gomez Adams is so affable and so oblivious that he just thinks this is a fun game. And that is a joke that I think would have been in the original episodes too, is these Adams don't realize when people are trying to do them harm.
Right. Because harming people is fun. That's the follow through on that thought, except the show always pulled back from that. The comic strips, you could see that these people killed. Here, I don't think we're ever supposed to make that conclusion, which is a strike against the show. It's something I'd want them to fix in the movies.
And the thieves do not have great success because they feel like they have to get Gomez out of the way, as if he's going to be the big one to stop them, not the furry hairball cousin It running around, or Lurch. And so they keep trapping him. He keeps coming back out. One joke I couldn't tell. Do the Adams even have a safe? Because we never see a safe. Are they barking up a totally wrong tree?
No, we see a safe at the end.
Yeah, the punchline is when they go to check on the jack-o'-lantern, it's just a pumpkin. He opens up the vault. He knew where it was all along. We don't know where it is in this house. But he opens it up and there's a very cheesy special effect of the grin going across the pumpkin.
Right.
Okay, that's right. Because there was nothing in it but a pumpkin, I didn't put it together that that's what they were trying to steal. And because it was in a wall and I kept thinking they were going to walk out having those muscle guys carry a safe. Yeah, and because I'll be honest, I wasn't super invested in this movie's plot.
Really?
I'm shocked. I didn't put it together.
Okay. Yeah, it just all sort of happenstance here. We have a lot of zaniness in this party, and then all of a sudden the cops show up, everyone's gone, and suddenly we're back to the Halloween theme. And this family is celebrating, the witching hour strikes. It's weird, this, maybe my mind is just corrupt, but like there's this weird moment where they're like, well, let's go get the children, and then they're like, oh, Pancho is with them, and we hear noises and stuff. Like, that's creepy and ooky in a way I don't think they intended.
Yeah, I agree on that.
But I was like, what's going on in there? No, you need to go in there right now. Like, this is not an appropriate thing to put in this otherwise wholesome show.
Well, they listen to it, and he's just merely talking about how good a father they have.
Is it?
Yeah.
I couldn't really hear the audio well. Okay.
Okay. In the copy I had, you could hear him very clearly saying, children, we have to do this just like your father used to do. And when I was young, I used to be so awkward and afraid, and your father was always so handsome and brave, and I always looked up to him, and all of those kinds of things that help put Gomez's fears at rest.
Okay, that helps. That definitely helps. It just looks like Pancho slipped off after midnight with two kids in the dark, and I just thought that was terrible. But what's even worse is this musical number as they proceed up to the attic and the scarecrow. One thing that's not going on my mix with Thriller and Monster Mash this October is Merry Shh Creepy Halloween.
I listened to this whole song. I couldn't turn it off. It was like a car wreck.
Yeah, so this one, obviously, there's no way you can't think of, if you've seen it, the Life Day song from the Star Wars Holiday Special. It's just right up there with this as bad. And what's crazy is that Morticia was kind of singing this song a few times throughout, which I found to be, of all the songs she could sing, why wouldn't it be the Addams Family theme with, like, different lyrics? This is like a maudlin, boring, dull, not exciting.
It's almost like they take it seriously. Like everyone, the whole audience is suddenly supposed to get ritualistic about Halloween. Weird. What a weird choice. And again, written by the guy who did the fun surfer rock theme. So why Vic Muzzy went sentimental, I don't know.
Here's my thought. The Carpenters at this time might have been huge. That kind of music was pretty big.
The Addams Family had records. Among the merchandise they sold at this time were just, Lurch would do like spoken word stuff. Like it was stuff that sold. So I think you're onto something. Maybe they thought they had a hit with this.
Yeah, maybe.
That's crazy.
But, you know, it just seems to me that to end the movie on this note and have like a Christmas-like ceremony with the scarecrow and the kids opening presents and all that, it's not working. And again, if this was an hour long instead of even, I know it's an hour and 14 minutes, but if it was made for an hour time slot, so it was like 40 minutes of this, you'd be much more forgiving. It seems that it takes forever to get to this point. And what they're doing here is like, this is the Addams Family celebrating opening presents and singing bad songs. That's not what I think of when I think of the Addams Family.
Mm-mm.
It's really strange.
But I loved Halloween specials and Christmas specials as a kid. I'd watch Rudolph and Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown endlessly, and I think that this ending would be what I would have appreciated the most, because I wanted Halloween specials to scare me. And I probably, as a very young child, if I'd watched this when it first came out, I'd have been 4 years old, and maybe Cousin Shy putting the smile on the pumpkin's face, even though it's just a wipe, I see that as an adult, as a kid, that could have spooked me, and then this ritual at the end and the song, it probably would have been my favorite part of it, as compared to the jokes that, yeah, I wasn't laughing at the series at that age. I don't think I'd have laughed at this at that age.
So, Stuart, Arnie, do you recommend Halloween with the new Addams Family? Stuart.
Okay, well, I'm going to try something here. Feel free to snap along.
All right, go for it.
It's tawdry and unfunny, production value's crummy, but even with more money, the Addams Family just waste all of the talent, from Gomez to the valet, they're bitter on the palate, and I blame NBC. They shouldn't even air it, the cobweb-covered dog shit, just throw it down a deep pit, this Addams Family. It ended TV careers, but wipe away your tears, they'll try in 14 years. I guess we'll wait and see. No way.
So, Stuart, I think you put more time into writing that than the putting this movie together. That's bravo, Stuart. Bravo. Arnie.
It's an obvious no, and I'm glad we covered this, though, because if you're discussing the Addams Family, yes, there are cartoons that appeared in The New Yorker. It's funny, because when the Addams Family 1991 movie came out, I don't know what got me, but I decided I was going to become an Addams Family super fan. And so I decided to watch all of the old episodes, which were in heavy reruns because of the movie, and I went and I bought a New Yorker book, and I'm like, wait a second, this is not funny. And then I rewatched the episodes, and I'm like, this is not funny. And so I explored the history of the Addams Family in my teens, and coming back to it and seeing this for the first time, I'm still like, it's not funny, but it's important. It is important because I believe that every Addams Family we're going to discuss from here on out reaches back to that TV series and its iconic theme song. And I will give this a compliment. Stuart, you called him out. John Astin is an actor I love in everything he does. He was so great as a recurring character as Harry's dad on Night Court.
Yes.
I loved every episode with him. I still, to this day, quote his line, but I'm feeling much better now. I mean, it's just, I love John Astin, and seeing him as Gomez Addams going nuts over the French and kissing Morticia up the arm sparked a little nostalgia. But if you want to revisit the Addams Family, the TV series had far less pain involved.
Yeah.
It looked better. It felt fresher. It had more energy. Go watch those episodes. Just forget this exists, because it does nobody any favors. It makes the show look worse by having this out there. It is truly the Addams Family holiday special and a not recommend.
Yeah, so we're all in the same place here. So I agree. I'm very glad we watched this, because this gives us an opportunity to cover what every other iteration we're going to talk about does harken back to. This is the family. We get to talk about the actors here. So for that alone, it's worth us as a team watching this movie for. But I don't think anyone listening to this podcast, unless you're deathly curious, needs to watch this. Listen to our review here and save yourself the trouble of sitting through this. It's not really all that watchable for mass audiences. But I agree everything you say about the need for us to cover this for our series. I said it before, the energy and the greatest is off, and the greatest hits of the Addams Family feels completely stale. We're going to see some of these jokes coming up in other iterations, and we'll discuss how that plays even then. But here, I felt so sorry for a lot of these actors. And I agree, John Astin can be good. I love Ted Cassidy. I mean, I don't like him as the Riddler, right? But, you know, John Astin usually brings a lot of energy and fun. And even here, he was playing that same going crazy with French joke to the point of nausea. Honestly, folks, skip this one. It's a not recommend, but I'm really glad we watched it.
But I'm excited to go back to the 1991 movie. I remember mixed feelings about it, but I haven't seen it in so long. It's cast was a cast I didn't know very well when it came out. I now know them a lot better, having seen both movies they made before and after that, Street Fighter. But
yep.
I think that this is really going to be the thing that everybody's looking forward to hearing us review.
Mm.
And we're going to make that joke every episode, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so please join us next time when we pay a call on The Addams Family.
Well, Tish, the hour of parting is near.
Always kind of knew it would end up like this. Just didn't think it'd be so soon.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
Well played, very amusing indeed.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating and putting out free shows every Tuesday.
This will surely be the best investment that we have ever made.
Now Playing is edited by Heath, Santiago, and Arnie.
No matter how often you scream at them or how severely you punish them, they always beg for more.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
Isn't he a lady killer?
Acquitted.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
I can honestly say that was most definitely a thing you did.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I'm sure they'll deny everything.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
I don't think you understand. I'm not locked up in here with you. You're locked up in here with me.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Have no fear. Justice shall prevail.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Goodbye.
Back then, nobody had VHRs. Yeah, nobody.